time. He plays all the hits from then, all the country hits, I should say, and looks back at pop culture and what was in the news and other things going on at that time. That's going to do it for me, everyone. Have a great weekend. We will not see you next week. We are going to be off because of the Badgers, but we'll be back soon here on Over the Back Fence.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Allison Keyes. Tensions are rising in the Middle East as Israel says it has conducted another airstrike in Beirut, hours after Hezbollah confirms that its leader, Nassan Nasrallah, was killed by an earlier attack. CBS's Robert Berger in Jerusalem.
The Israeli military described Hassan Nasrallah as one of the greatest enemies of the State of Israel of all time, and said his elimination makes the world a safer place. An army statement said Israeli attacks on the Hezbollah leadership will continue.
Military analyst Paul Moorcraft.
The Israelis hope that it's defanging by decapitating the leadership. It is going to reduce the pressure. I don't think so. It all depends on what Iran does.
The death toll from Hurricane Helene is now up to 53, and there are more concerns. Heavy rain in North Carolina is causing major flood worries in some areas, including Mountain Island Lake, where this man lives.
I've seen trees floating in the water, but I would imagine in the next couple of days there's going to be a ton of trees, a ton of debris, and I've just never seen the water that high.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis says at least 11 people died in his state and residents were hit hard.
You saw a storm surge in excess of 15 feet. So that is much, much more significant than what we've seen in recent storms like Idalia that hit, and certainly Debbie. And that is really, really destructive.
Also in Florida, in just over an hour, SpaceX is launching its Crew 9 mission headed for the International Space Station. That's where two NASA astronauts have been for more than 100 days longer than planned after technical issues with their first ride, the Boeing Starliner. CBS's Manuel Bajorquez.
To get the Starliner astronauts home, NASA had to bump two astronauts, Zena Cardman and Stephanie Wilson, from today's flight despite more than a year of training. Liftoff is set for 1:17 this afternoon.
New York City Mayor Eric Adams was at church after becoming the first sitting mayor in the Big Apple to face federal charges. He says he's innocent.
I do a lot of praying, and I'm looking forward when I leave here to go on and continue to do what I do moving our city forward.
If you think your fellow shoppers at Costco look a bit younger these days, you're right. Gen Z people and millennials are part of a growing trend in wholesale clubs. Costco says about half of the new signups this year were under 40, which means some 2.5 million young people are now shelling out cash for membership fees. Costco says the age has been dropping ever since COVID-19. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Seth here, host of Over the Back Fence. We're on the air live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., taking your calls to buy or sell, talk local events, or whatever, only on WFHR.
And Clear, they want a workforce that has the know-how in working with and programming machinery fitted with AI. She says that's why the system is integrating it with coursework at regional campuses.
Here in Wisconsin, we really have a structural workforce shortage, and our demographics are telling us that that will continue. And what we're seeing, it's really upskilling the workforce.
Elected officials face pressure to adopt regulations that would ensure artificial intelligence is used safely. Mayor Filt says schools in Wisconsin prioritize teaching students how to use AI ethically and appropriately. An analysis from the Center for Security and Emerging Technology says community and technical colleges have the potential to grow and sustain the AI talent pool, but barriers like inconsistent government funding need to be addressed. Merrifield says Wisconsin's campuses are coming off modest general aid increases from the legislature. She says they'll be requesting more in the next budget cycle. They also have to balance tuition affordability.
We understand that our students often come from limited means. They have limited financial resources, and so we try to keep tuition as low as possible.
And whether it's AI curriculum or other courses, Merrifield suggests they need the right amount of support to stay nimble and retool programming based on workforce trends. Waukesha County Technical College is one of the schools offering a class where students learn about the foundations of AI. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Lots of sunshine today. Highs around 80 degrees. Clear tonight. Lows around 51. Sunshine and upper 70s for Sunday. On Monday, sunny 78 and then turning cooler for Tuesday. Sunshine with a high near 62. 63 Wednesday.
Currently 75 degrees.
Pat Kreitlow.
Monday morning on Up North News Radio, State Senator Kelderoy's on how Republicans just keep digging a bigger hole when it comes to women's reproductive health care rights.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow, weekday mornings starting at 6.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids' home of Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Kripescast. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and we are powered by Everlight Solar. Hey, folks. Welcome to another episode of the Kripescast. Today, my guest is comedian Matteo Lane. He has been named one of Variety's top 10 comics to watch. You may have seen his stand-up special, Hair Plugs and Heartache. He's been on Netflix's Standout as well as the comedy lineup. He is from Illinois, but let's not hold that against him. Okay, he's coming on to chit-chat, and he is coming to Milwaukee on October 10th at the Pabst Theater. So if you're in Milwaukee, make sure you check him out. Before we get to my interview with him, I just want to let you guys know that I am on the road. I will be in Ohio, Pennsylvania, the East Coast, Boston this week, and all over. You can get your tickets, charliebehrens.com. And also, folks, we are raising money for Doctors Without Borders, continuing to do that. You can check out the link in the show notes or follow them at Doctors Without Borders at Doctors Without Borders anywhere on social media. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, here's my conversation with comedian Matteo Lane.
Great meeting you. I was going to say I'm traveling too. So,
well, if you want New York traffic just sort of blaring into your, if it gets too loud, let me know. I can close my windows and turn my air on, but it's the first like nice day in New York, so I have my windows open.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I can't hear anything like that. Has it been hot there? What do you mean? I haven't been paying attention to New York weather. Sweltering, swampy.
Yeah, New York, it's just September hits and then it's like we pay all this money for this rent for like 3 weeks out of the year for it to be like crisp, nice days and you're not sweating and everyone's happy. And then it turns into winter.
Yeah, there's always just sort of the slush effect. I just feel like every time in New York, I've got my suitcase because I'm usually bouncing from one person's place to the other. And then you're just dragging, you've got like that salt stain, you know, on the suitcase. That's what I always remember with New York.
Yeah. But it's not like that. Where do you live? Wisconsin?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in Chicago. It's the same thing, right? Like you get the salt, like your boots ruin salt stains, like pants ruin salt stain. Look at it. It gives a thumbs up. That's weird.
That is kind of weird. It's like the robots, dude. They are watching and it's a terrifying thing. No, you're absolutely right.
Wait, did we start the podcast?
I don't know. It kind of starts whenever it feels right.
All right.
Do you have any questions leading in?
No.
I figured you didn't. So I was just trying to be economical with your time. No, but for me, it was just that on a suitcase because I usually wouldn't have a suitcase, but it'd be just dragging that thing through town. You know, this is when I was like first going out there trying to sort of make it or whatever, but I would just have this salt line on my suitcase and that would be from New York, you know?
Yeah. I think about now, like when I grew up in Chicago, well, I grew up in Arlington Heights and then moved to Chicago when I was 18, but still like the back of your pants become like hard from the amount of salt that's sort of stuck to it.
Yeah.
And I guess we didn't care about our pants back then because I just was like this is the look. Like, it just was it.
Yeah. I mean, it and then the sort of damp, just like you'd be in class with that. I went to UW Madison. So I would do a thing where I'd bike to class too. So you kind of like, there are these little things you could kind of use to squeeze your pants in so you didn't get chain whatever on them. And then we had like baggier pants. How old are you? You're about my age, right?
I'm 38.
Yeah, I'm 37. And not to brag or anything, you know, but
then you do have a Wisconsin accent. I mean, I have a Chicago accent, but you're just sort of, you're in between me and the mother from Bobby's World.
Oh, really? That she's pretty far in too. I feel like she's very Minnesota, which would make sense. Chicago, Milwaukee, you know, Bemidji kind of a thing.
Not to cut you off, but it's like, I forget like the Midwest accents because I'm so used to New York accents now.
Yeah.
I forget about like that. Oh, gosh.
You know, I think being in Midwest and especially having this brand that's very Midwest, it's allowed me to really indulge in something that I was trying to get rid of for a while. So because I was in the news business. So
yeah, they
try to hide it
out of you.
Yeah. Do you miss Chicago?
No, I miss my family. And there's times I miss the thing for me is like, I'm happy where I'm working and I'm working in New York. You know, I can do stand up every night at the Cellar. Like,
yeah,
I'm happy where I work. I also love the look of New York. I love the urban design of New York. I like the density. I like the consistently being, you know, having people around you. I like that. I mean, I don't like it. I think people think of New York, they think of like Times Square, Hell's Kitchen, where it's like chaos. I live in the Village, so it's a little more neighborhoody. I'm not surrounded by skyscrapers, but yeah, I miss parts of Chicago. Like I miss my friends. I miss my family. I miss all 31 of my cousins. I miss my mom. I miss my niece. I miss my nephews. I miss, you know, it's like, yeah, that kind of stuff. But I did it too. I lived there, you know?
Yeah. When did you say you moved out?
25. I left Chicago. I moved to New York.
So were you doing, is that sort of where you started stand up, was in the Chicago scene?
Yeah. The first show that I ever did was, I think 2009. I've been doing it 16 years now. It was at Marty DeRosa's show in Old Town. No. What is it? Where is Zany's again in Chicago? Zany's
Old Town.
Where is it?
I think it's Old Town, isn't it?
Yeah. Am I thinking we're all like North and Lafayette. Is that the street? LaSalle and North. Like, is that?
That sounds right. Cause you weren't doing the one in Rosemont. You were doing the one Chicago proper, right?
It was there. It was there. So let's just say.
Okay. Okay.
You know, Chicagoans are like North Wells Street. No, it's not the neighborhood though. I'll call my friend Sophia, but, I did it there and it was like, I got 3 minutes to do my act and Marty was nice enough to put me on. He was dating my friend, so that's why he did it. And then I had like 31 of my, like literally my grandparents came, my cousins came, everybody came. And, so I've been doing it since then. And then I really got into it, I would say around 2010 and then 2011. And then I got a job. I was illustrating for a living and, I got a job, a full-time job in New York. So I moved to New York in like a month and just kept doing open mics in New York. So Chicago was a great like base. Like I really learned everything I needed to know, like how to develop my voice and how to do open mics and how to write jokes and how to like, you know, mingle and how to like, you know, there's like a business side to it. So Chicago was like the perfect place to sort of start.
Do you think like Chicago has, like a comedic vibe to it or something where like all these comedian, what like are distinctions for a Chicago comic, would you say?
I feel like can always recognize a Chicago comic. It's not that they're theatrical. It's the, how do I like put this? Like you can always tell a Chicago comic. They're different than New York comics. You know, New York comics, if you're from New York, I'm generalizing here, but you tend to be a little like more straightforward, one-linery, joke. And that's because your open mics are 2 minutes long. So you got to get to that joke quick. I'm talking about like open micers before you really develop your voice. you can see Chicago comics because maybe we get 3 or 4 minutes on stage, and Chicago has that, you know, improv influence in Chicago. The great thing about Chicago is that there's no industry. So you just kind of are on stage experimenting every night. So you get, I remember people like Candy Lawrence, who was like, she's phenomenal. And she would do like, she would scream and yell and, you know, go back to jokes and then do like, it was just like so out of the box, or like the Putterboss sisters or Beth Stelling or, you know, Cameron Esposito or Lisa Traeger and all these people, Marty DeRosa, like Danny Callis at the time too. Like there was just something about a Chicago comic. It kind of had like the stamp of Chicago to it. It's almost like a flavor than it is like specific. It's hard to describe. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And that like time on stage really, really, I think, does it. Because especially, you know, in the Midwest, I feel like it's a bit slower pace, maybe not to the extent that you like exaggerate it comedically speaking. But the audience is also, I think, like a little bit nicer, maybe, at least at first sniff, at least your open mic audience, you know, maybe they'll pretend to listen as opposed to just being on their phone. You know?
Because open micers in bigger cities, open micers are just other comics. So right. In Chicago, what was really similar to New York, Chicago and New York have so many similarities. It's like, I mean, I know people in DC who would do open mics for like 5 audience members, like people who went to go see open mics. I mean, that was unheard of in Chicago. You just did open mics for other comics, and New York was like that too. And you do 2 or 3 mics a night, which New York was like that too. So the jump to New York, I think that's the benefit for Chicago comics. We come in hot, we come in strong. And it's sort of like speaking Italian and then going to Spain. It's like, I'll learn how to learn this language I'll learn it quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and where everyone else is like coming from Mandarin, you know, Russian, you know, Tagalog, it's like they have a harder time adapting, where Chicagoans are like, got it.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense. You also speak a lot of, I want to talk more about the comedy, but while you brought up the languages, you speak a lot of languages, I'm getting from like your stand up and everything. What was your like English first language?
Yeah. And then English first language. I learned Italian probably around like 14, because we have friends and family friends in Italy. And I really enjoyed the Italian part of my culture. And so I would just go back to Sicily, and you just have to learn it there because no one speaks English.
Yeah.
So you just kind of come back like, buongiorno, mamma. And then I learned Spanish. I feel like I was, it's like a tapestry, like a slowly weaving in, just like years of kind of building up. But knowing Italian makes it so much easier to like speak Spanish, and then French eventually. But like my French and Spanish are, I would say, proficient, where my Italian is fluent.
Yeah. Okay. I like in your stand up how you weave that in, and you weave like the singing in and all that sort of stuff. I just feel like you have so many tools as a comic that it's almost like you throw it in there and it's like skills you don't even talk about. You know what I mean? I got skills I don't talk about. That's what it seems like.
Well, that makes it sound sexual. Yeah. I'm closing the windows because of course there hasn't been construction all day, but oh my God, I can't think how not strong I am. Oh, I hate that sound. Yeah, but
you got to put some WD-40 on your window seals there.
That would require a straight person to be within these walls. I just have to find someone straight. Yeah, but I think the sort of like back and forth with like voices, and to me, it just is sort of like a natural way of speaking, I guess. That sounds so lame, but that's how my whole family talks. If they're telling stories, like the voices are kind of just included. And so I've always just kind of talked that way. And then people will be like, oh, I like you when you do voices on stage. And in my head, I'm like, voices. But then I think of voices as like the 80s, where like Jim Carrey is like, you guys want to see an impression? They turn around, they come back, and they're the impression. So yeah, I would say, unbeknownst to me, a lot of people comment on that, like the voices kind of weave in and out, which really makes me look like I have multiple personality disorder. But, you know,
I mean, it definitely is an asset for comedy, having multiple personalities. But you feel like that whole thing was sort of your family is kind of what developed your comedy? Like, did you grow up wanting to do comedy or just realize you're funny over time?
Well, I like as a gay person, one, I come from a very funny family. I mean, my mother and her brothers and sisters had a very traumatic childhood, and I think they chose humor as a way to deal with it. So everyone's very, very funny, and not funny like put something on their head, and like they're very witty. And so when you eat, I grew up next to my cousins and we grew up like brothers and sisters and we're all the same age. So when, you know, you sit at a dinner table and there's 12 of you, you have to keep up, you know. Yeah. So you get your skills pretty young, and but unbeknownst to you. I mean, even today, if I watch my Aunt Cindy, she's telling a story. She has no idea that she's creating a story. She's bringing in premises. There's punchlines. She's using voices. She's got like a whole arc. Like, it just flows out of her naturally, which I do think is a very big characteristic of Italians in general. Like, Italians, even if you go to Italy, they're very, everything is kind of this.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say, what was the other question you asked me?
Just kind of your, is that where you got the passion for comedy? Like, was there a thing where you're like, oh, I want to be a comedian, or was it this thing where it happened through your family naturally?
Well, I think it kind of just, I fell into it because I didn't, I always say this. I know there were. I did not have access to. I didn't see a gay man do stand-up comedy till I was 23. So I didn't know it was available to me. My assumption, along with sports and a lot of other really male-dominated things, was like it was for men or very specific women. So I didn't fall in love with stand-up until I started listening to Kathy Griffin when I was like 16, because she was the first person I remember in my life speak positively about gay people while still making fun of us. Like, she was on the inside. And yeah. I remember my homophobia was so internalized. I thought to myself, she shouldn't talk about gay people. That'll ruin her career. So you have to remember like where we were as a society, where I was, where a lot of gay people were, you know. So, but all that to say is like, I didn't know it was available to me. So the first gay person I ever saw stand-up comedy ever was at an open mic. His name was Bill Cruz. He's a very funny comic. He's a Chicago comic. That was the first person ever. And then it like clicked with me. I'm like, oh, like gay people can do stand-up with straight people, or gay people can do stand-up. It doesn't have to be a one-man show. It doesn't have to be about our trauma. It doesn't have to be Rent. It doesn't have to be musical involved. It doesn't have to be characters. It doesn't have to be improv. It doesn't have to be, it can be stand-up. So I was unaware of it. Now, obviously there were like Jim David and Rick Crome and Mario Cantone. And, you know, there's a lot of comics who were doing it in the 80s closeted for a long time. Mario Cantone, not so much, but Mario Cantone, I would say was like sort of not sort of is like the pioneer of doing gay comedy at a time it wasn't acceptable. But you just have to remember, we didn't have YouTube. Whatever was on TV was the only thing available to me. So those things were not available to me. So I think a lot of other gay people of my time, just it wasn't, we didn't see it. So
yeah, I mean, I think we easily forget, what year was it? Maybe like 2011 or something, when Joe Biden was, I think, just off the cuff being like, yeah, I think gay marriage should be legalized. And then at that time, Obama wasn't even publicly for it. And then, you know, it's just crazy to think it wasn't that long ago. And this is kind of the time when you're like starting to get into comedy. Were your first bits about being gay? Yeah.
Yes. I knew you were going to ask that, because it was like, you know, I love people were like, you know, did you hide it? I'm like, how could I hide it? Listen to my voice. There's no way I could hide it. Can you imagine me going on stage? It's my girlfriend is the worst. You know, it's just, there is no world. I was also, let me just say this, was lucky to come up at a time where being gay, I think if I had done it 10 years earlier, I wouldn't have had the same results. And I think if I had done it 10 years later, it would have been, the resistance would have been way different. So I was at this time where it was just acceptable and I was never judged for it. And the people that were the most supportive of me, which were straight men, comics, I found straight men and women and obviously gays, but like you're surrounded predominantly by straight men. And you would be surprised how comedians don't care about you at all. They don't care where you come from. All they care is, do you have good jokes? Do you have a good work ethic? Do you actually care about this? They just want to see you care about it as much as they do. And that was sort of my insight to comedy. You know, I think it's easy. Like there are times obviously where there is people are against you just for being gay, but I would say I've had a really positive experience. You know, I think it's easy to be defensive and assume the worst. You know, people are going to hate me because of X, Y, and Z, but I really put myself out there and was welcomed with open arms. And I have some of my best memories are my open mic days and bar show days. They're just the best.
Yeah. When you think about those, do you kind of see them now? Like with sort of rose colored glasses, like were you at that time, was this sort of the thing you wanted to do when you had to make it and you had that pressure of it? Or, I mean, at the time you had another job working in a great industry. So right. Did that kind of help you early on, not put too much pressure on it?
No, there was always pressure. You know, I look back at it now and I look at it for what it was. It was an exciting time. I figured out what I wanted to do in life. I was surrounded by like-minded people. I was surrounded by a community, and I still am surrounded by a community that doesn't judge you for being weird, thinking weird, saying things weird. You know, I think I never quite had a community that I felt fully accepted by until I was with comedians. And to this day, my favorite thing to do is sit at the Cellar table and sit and bitch and moan with Keith Robinson. And, you know, it just, I don't know, but I would say like my open mic days, I was very driven and I loved every minute of it. Just the process of feeling yourself get better, the process of seeing people react to you, the kind of the window got less narrow and the world seemed more open to you, and traveling with my friend Evan Williams to every single open mic. And at that point, your only currency is just the respect of other comics. So if I'm in a room and I make Dan Soder laugh, that's enough to get me going for the next 3 weeks, you know? Yeah. And I love it. I'm one of those people, a lot of comedians, 99% of the people I started with, they drop off or they realize, oh, you know what? I'm a writer or I'm a producer or I'm a host or I'm a book writer. Or I'm an actor. Or I'm a, and I find more and more, I've been doing this 16 years now. I am a stand-up comic. I respect this first. I'm not doing this to get something else. I'm doing everything else to keep doing this. I did 50 shows at the Comedy Cellar in July. I had the month off and I needed to write new material and I did as many spots as I could. I love it. I love the traveling. I love the shows. I love the art form. I love the creating new jokes, the back and forth, the dialogue with comics. I love it. I really, really love it.
That's cool. And you see that you mentioned work ethic too. Do you feel like there's a certain work ethic in maybe Midwest comics or New York comics? Can you tell like a difference culturally or regionally with respect to the work ethic?
Well, I think New York serves itself more for people who, New York is way more cutthroat. I mean, no question. New York, it has that stereotype, obviously, for years of being like, it'll chew you up and spit you out. It will, because New York is a city that doesn't care about you. So you just have to kind of figure out your way through it. It will never care about you. If you leave, it's not crying. You know, if you stay, it's not celebrating. It doesn't care. Chicago is a city that cares about you. You know, and so it's a little different, but I would say I came up with the training of fine arts and opera singing, and I kind of had an understanding of the amount of work I'd have to put in to get the results. So my approach towards stand up is a little more systematical, I think, systematic than maybe other people's approach, but everyone has a different approach. Like, you know, me and Lisa Traeger started at the same time. She's one of the funniest comics I've ever met. Her and I have wildly different approaches towards stand-up comedy, and the results are the same. You know what I'm saying? She's a huge success. I just saw her film her Netflix special. She's amazing. She's way funnier than I am. You know, so it's like, obviously my approach works for me, but my approach was way more in line with like opera training. Like, okay, when I was doing open mics, I wasn't going out. I wasn't dancing. I wasn't drinking. I wasn't doing drugs. I wasn't doing Fire Island. I wasn't doing P-Town. I wasn't doing none of it. It was Monday to Monday stand-up. That's it. I only hung out with stand-ups. I would do open mics. I'd work on one joke per week, flesh it out till I got to the creek on Friday, and then sort of debut that joke on Friday. If you get called in the first group, that, you know, you're doing better, and you do the same process next week and bar shows and build your material. So I kind of look at it more that way than other people.
Yeah. And
not to say that Lisa's lazy, by the way. I'm just saying that her and I approach it very differently, and I think she would agree.
On the Badger Sports Network, from Learfield.
Ron Day has become the NCAA's all-time career rushing leader.
This is your home for Wisconsin football.
Still loose. The Badgers cover it up. Touchdown, Wisconsin. There it is. And this game is underway with a bang. One more time. J.J. Watt. Touchdown, Wisconsin. Hello, Russell Wilson.
On Wisconsin.
70 yards, catch and run. Lee Evans, his fourth touchdown reception today.
Record-breaking run. Melvin Gordon, 4-0-8.
Picked off by T.J. Watt, and he is gone.
The NCAA touchdown record belongs to Ball.
As the Badgers pour onto the field, they are Rose Bowl champions again.
10-10.
Badger football is on the air. Brought to you by American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank is a proud partner of the Wisconsin Badgers. U.S. Bank. Equal housing lender. Member FDIC. And by UW Health Sports Medicine. Treating the Badgers. Treating you. Welcome to the Badger Pregame Show.
And what could be more appropriate for Wisconsin football as USC enters the Big Ten Conference? We get a Hollywood premiere as the Badgers take on the Big Ten season, or kick off the Big Ten season, rather, here in Los Angeles at the Memorial Coliseum. This historic stadium opened in 1923, has hosted the Summer Olympic Games in 32 and 84, and again in 4 years in 2028. The Badgers last played here in 1966. USC lost their Big Ten opener a week ago at Michigan. The Badgers opening Big Ten play after a bye week and with a new starting quarterback in Braden Locke taking over after Tyler Van Dyke had season-ending surgery earlier this week. The voice of the Badgers is here with me, Matt LePay. Matt, let's start with this because extraordinary. You've been doing this a long time, but this, along with maybe at Pasadena, this is a little bit surreal. What a cool stadium to walk into.
Yeah, you think of the history in this stadium through the years, and obviously, as you mentioned, the Olympic Games, two of them, with a third on the way. The great players who have been here for USC, for UCLA, for the Los Angeles Rams, the original home of the Los Angeles Dodgers when they moved out here from Brooklyn before Dodger Stadium was built a few years after their arrival. It oozes history, and it's one of those things that I was talking to, you know, John Kuhn yesterday. Like in the NFL, you got Lambeau Field, you've got Soldier Field, and most of the other stadiums are relatively new, and it's still one of the things in college football, maybe one of the very few things left. I mean, Camp Randall Stadium is more than 100 years old. You got Ohio Stadium, Beaver Stadium with Penn State, and you have those really iconic venues. But this one, you know, this place in the Rose Bowl, it's pretty cool to be able to check that box here at the Coliseum when you just give yourself a couple of minutes and think about all of the great athletes who have performed on this stage.
Yeah. Let's talk about today in this game. Wisconsin obviously adapts. They lose Tyler Van Dyke 7 offensive plays into the game against Alabama 2 weeks ago. Today, Braden Locke, no stranger to stepping into that role, but he did so at the spur of the moment. Now they've had 2 weeks to prepare. How is it different?
Yeah, I think having those 2 weeks to prepare for him, even though he does have experience, the coaches talked about that in the spring and in fall camp, and he was in a pretty good battle for the starting job with Tyler Van Dyke. They all, and you would like to think that all quarterbacks have a great grasp of offenses and high football IQs. Some are probably better than others, but they rave about Locke's ability to really grasp what they're doing. Even, you know, a year ago as he was learning on the fly, they have talked about that with him. And that's, you know, Tyler Van Dyke did a great job of catching up and getting a feel of what they were doing. But with Braden, it just seems to be a big strength of his. He doesn't have the velocity on his throws the way Tyler Van Dyke does. He's not as physically big as Tyler Van Dyke, but they believe, and I don't think it's coach speak, they said this for a while now, that they really felt as though they have a couple of quarterbacks that they feel good about this year. Unfortunately, one is done for the year. With Van Dyke, you might have to do a few things differently, maybe play a little bit faster. We'll see if, in fact, they're able to do that. But I do think it's still somewhat limited, his experience, yeah. But he does have some as a college quarterback, and you hope he can draw from that and build on it starting today.
Matt, I'll stay on the offensive side, and this team, Wisconsin, needs to find the bigger play. They really haven't done it since the LSU game and the bowl game on January 1. They haven't hit for the big play in the first three games this year. Is there more availability? How can they find what that is?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's been a real mystery, and it's been a, you know, in the passing game, it's been a problem for a while. Yeah. Now, when Braylon Allen was here, when he was healthy, you know, he could break big runs. We saw that multiple times in Braylon's career at Wisconsin. You're trying to find that next running back who can do it. You know, keep in mind, Tawee Walker got banged up in the season opener, and you know, he missed a game. He's toughing it out. He's, you know, probably not 100%, doing what he can, could get you the tough yards. Jez Malusi's gone through a lot of injuries in his career, doing everything he can. Now, does that come from Darian Dupree, maybe? Cade Iacomelli has got, you know, a little bit of burst to his game. But it's that never-ending search, and at the same time, Mike, it's still about trying to spread the wealth of the passing game. Luke Fickell's talked about that before camp started, you know, all the targets that Will Pauling had last year, the number of receptions. His hope was to see fewer receptions with him specifically and spread the ball around. Well, it's still been the leading guy in terms of, and you're looking for a guy to throw to, it's Will Pauling, and I get it, but somehow, some way, get some other guys involved, Tretch Kekahuna, C.J. Williams, Bryson Green. I'm not, you know, I don't try to pass myself all off as a talent evaluator, but I think this receiving core has more talent than what the statistics would show us.
Then Michigan ran for almost 300 on this USC defense a week ago. Does it create or does it give the perception of opportunity there?
Well, it does, but again, it comes back to the big hits because they had 290 rushing yards, 157 came on three plays.
Yep.
You know, 40-some yards, 50-some yards, 63-yard run that helped set up the touchdown. USC, the people out here will tell you, is considerably better defensively. They tackle better, although they did not at crunch time against Michigan last week. But you would hope that there could be some opportunities for Wisconsin to get, I mean, however they do it. But the one thing, Mike, where they feel like they can build from is the work of the offensive line for the Badgers. As lopsided as that Alabama game was, I think they have been encouraged with that starting five and the offensive line that they can move some people around. USC is going to be minus one of its rotation D tackles as Bear Alexander has decided to leave the program. So, I mean, they still have depth there, just not as much in terms of experience. And, you know, that's one example where maybe Wisconsin can get a little something going offensively. And, you know, the 16-play 80-yard drives are nice, but that can wear on you and things can go wrong. If they could find ways to get chunk plays with any degree of consistency, you know, it's easy to say, but it's been a really, really difficult thing for this program to be able to accomplish.
All right. Maybe the more significant challenge is when Wisconsin's defense is on the field, because USC's offensive talent, Miller Moss, is their quarterback. He stayed. He's a USC fan as a kid. He stayed and waited his turn behind Caleb Williams. But he's got a lot of weapons to work with.
He does, including Zachariah Branch, who's going to be, he's a dangerous guy in the return game. He was an All-American kick and punt returner last year for the Trojans, an and almost broke one in their season opener against LSU. But they're going to be down a couple of targets, it looks like, in this game, though. They're tight end. Lake McCree got hurt in the Michigan game last week. He's going to be out for the next several weeks. Makai Lemon was hurt in the game. He's, again, modest receiving statistics through two games plus for him, but he's a weapon. But they have guys who can make the spectacular catch. Kyren Hudson had a circus catch in the opener against LSU. Jacoby Lane had a big touchdown in the moment, had a chance to be a game winner against Michigan. It wasn't, but it was a big catch in that game against the Wolverines. And a guy out of the backfield, Woody Marks, he's a transfer from Mississippi State, caught over 200 passes with that program, and is already has 11 receptions out of the backfield through three games for the Trojans. So Moss, who's not as athletic as Jalen Milroe, I don't know if there's a quarterback who is in college football, but he's a tough guy, and he knows how to distribute the football.
Let me finish with this. We've talked about this many times on the radio shows during the week and on some pregame shows. Today is another opportunity game. We looked at them with Alabama and then this trip and then home games against Penn State and Oregon. But one of them you got to bite on, and what are the chances that this is that?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we all know what the perception of this team is right now. We get it. You can't sugarcoat that. People are frustrated. Yeah. Everybody is frustrated. Yeah. This isn't turning as fast as people had hoped or expected. But we also know how it works. Fans and media, maybe every bit as much. If things go really well today, the whole perception changes.
Sure.
Their thing, I think, for it to happen, Mike, and Fickell, in talking with him multiple times this week, It's an ability to get the ship righted when things start to go sideways. You think of that Alabama game where it was very close to being 14-10. It
yep.
wasn't. Could have been 14-6. It wasn't. Two plays later, it's 21-3. And then the second half, boom, it's 28-3. But when they miss that scoring chance late in the first half, you just felt the air come out of the stadium, and it started from the Wisconsin sidelines.
Yeah.
And late last year, they were able to overcome that after terrible starts against Nebraska and Minnesota. They were able to right the ship. Those programs aren't nearly as good as mm-hmm. Alabama. They're probably not as good as this USC team here is today. But if you get somebody to come up and make a play when it looks like things are starting to go sideways, get it back on track, it's a confidence thing. Fickell's used that word I don't know how many times this week. Just, you know, have an anger, whatever it takes, to say, wait a minute, you know, we're better than this, and now you just need some guys to go out there and prove it.
There we go. The game will kick about 2:30, Wisconsin and USC, here from the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. Still to come on the Badgers pregame show, we'll hear from Wisconsin Athletics Director Chris McIntosh, visit with sideline reporter Patrick Herb. But when we continue, we'll take a look at the Trojans of Southern Cal with the voice of USC, Pete Arbogast. He's next. This is Badger Football from Learfield.
Odyssey Brands is a proud partner of UW Athletics and a supporter of our Wisconsin dairy farmers. We believe in using only the highest quality ingredients. Four generations of cheese-making excellence goes into every batch of our Odyssey Greek yogurt and feta cheese. Check us out at odysseybrands.com.
The men and women of the Wisconsin Operating Engineers operate the heavy equipment that builds our roads, bridges, and schools. But did you know they also build the wind and solar farms that supply clean energy to our homes and businesses? They install the broadband infrastructure that helps provide high-speed internet to every corner of Wisconsin. Build your career with the Wisconsin Operating Engineers. Visit join139.com to learn more.
It takes hard work to be the best in the game. Planning, commitment, resilience, sweat. That's why Old Dominion Freight Line, the number one national LTL carrier for quality, works hard to be the best in the game and is proud to support those striving to be the best in theirs. Old Dominion Freight Line, official freight carrier of Wisconsin Athletics, helping the world keep promises.
Every Qdoba catering order is a fresh-made Mexican feast of hand-smashed, flame-grilled, sliced, diced, and sautéed flavors perfect for any occasion. Whether you're planning your office's tortilla Tuesday, hosting a post-game party for your intramural dodgeball team, or trying to bring in a dinner for your PTA meeting that's so good, it'll bump your kid up to an A- in Spanish class. Qdoba Catering. Fresh, hot, easy, delicious. Order today.
Odyssey Brands is a proud partner of UW Athletics and a supporter of our Wisconsin dairy farmers. We believe in using only the highest quality ingredients. Four generations of cheese-making excellence goes into every batch of our Odyssey Greek yogurt and feta cheese. Check us out at odysseybrands.com.
The Badger Sports Network.
The Badgers come up where the goal line stands.
From Learfield.
Oh, what an answer by the Badgers.
The Badgers play here. Tune in to every game for Wisconsin football right here.
Wisconsin Badgers football brought to you on WFHR by 8th Street Auto, Econ Electric Incorporated, and Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep. Listen all season long on 97.5 WFHR or streaming live on the Civic Media app.
Midday Magazine, talk radio that speaks with you, not at you. Join the conversation 4 to 5 Monday through Friday as we discuss local issues, events, and more. We'll be here interviewing some of your favorite local people. And find the podcast at civicmedia.us. Midday Magazine, a dialogue like no other. Only on WFHR, locally grown radio.
Food and Drug Administration.
So it is Wisconsin at USC today, a kick at 2:30. The Trojans, 13th ranked in the AP, wins over LSU and Utah State in a three-point loss last week at Michigan. Lincoln Riley's offense, always the lead story. Miller Moss is the man taking over for former Heisman Trophy winner Caleb Williams, who's now in Chicago playing on Sundays. Moss has averaged 296 a game, five TDs and a pick in the Trojans' 2-1 start. Bigger story is likely the USC defense and what they will and will not do this season. Let's start here as we welcome in Pete Arbogast, the voice of the Trojans. And I'll start by saying last week I was on the road. We had a bye week, but I listened to your broadcast from the big house in Ann Arbor. And that loss, I'm curious as to your belief on it's hard to lose a game when you give up 32 yards throwing, but big chunk plays on the ground defensively were the story.
Yeah, there were three of them. And the pick six didn't help any.
Right.
And they did play pretty well against the run, really. When you take away those three, you can't do that. But then you're talking about 40-some-odd carries for 150, which isn't too bad.
Yeah.
But there you go. Those three long runs kill you. This defense is better than it was, and that's to say that they were awful for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Couldn't tackle anybody. Couldn't defend anybody in the secondary. Tough around the edges. All that's gone now. They look much better on defense, and the fans and everybody here we're just glomming onto any hope on the defense side of the ball.
Is Danton Lynn the new defensive coordinator? Is he what's going to hold on to this and make this program work under Lincoln Riley? Obviously, that's first year here. That's the move.
Yeah, they're already talking about him, and you're going to be a head coach somewhere someday, and that might be sooner than later. Pretty good defensive coaching staff, and that means, that tells me that Lincoln Riley has said, okay, I'm going to hire a bunch of great defensive guys and let them do their job, and I'm going to concentrate on my stuff, and they concentrate on their stuff, and let's see how it goes. And it's been better. It's been better. I don't know if we're ready, but we're pretty good.
Miller Moss waited. It doesn't happen, and it's probably not going to happen anymore in college football. He waited for his turn. It's an easy off-ramp to go somewhere else. He didn't take that opportunity. What does he bring?
Well, he's an SC fan. He grew up as a Trojan fan, like from the time he was five, that kind of thing.
Makes a difference.
Not the kind of guy that's going anywhere. He got the dream job and done.
Yeah.
He's good. He's not going to fool anybody with his legs now.
Yeah.
If he runs once a game, that's amazing, but pretty accurate. He got fouled up on that pick six last week, but the Michigan guy's pretty darn good, the guy that returned it. And he's not going to hurt you. And he's in a Lincoln Riley offense, like you mentioned. So he's got a lot of weapons. He's got good running backs. He's got good receivers. He's got an offensive line that's been holding up for the most part. They got him a few times, but Michigan's defensive line might be the best defensive line in the country for all we know. Altogether, I think he's fine. There's a kid in the pipeline that's coming that's like the guy, but he ain't here yet. So.
Yeah. Talking to Pete Arbogast, he's the voice of the SC Trojans, has been for more than a minute, and I know that because of the picture that's on your credential.
It's my bar mitzvah photo, I'm pretty sure. Well, that's Pete Carroll's hand, so that gives you at least that.
Gives you an idea.
I started in 89.
Okay.
And I'm turning 70 in another month or so, so I'm thinking 2030.
There you go.
And that'll be parts of six decades, and lots of luck following that up.
Right. What do you make of the change into the Big Ten? I would assume that you would have loved the status quo of what the Pac-10, Pac-12 was. I want your thoughts.
I don't miss going to Corvallis, Oregon, or okay. Tucson. I don't care about those. Pullman's a lovely little college town, yeah. But meh.
You haven't been to West Lafayette yet?
I've been there as a fan, because I was in Cincinnati for a little while. My son and I got student tickets and sat in the student section when Drew Brees beat Ohio State on a last-minute pass.
Boy.
So that was a good day, except for the fact that one of the students threw up on my son. But other than that, it was really fun. So I've been to a lot of places. Put them on the field. It's my team against some other team and a broadcaster. I got a game. Let's go. There's a few places I've not been, though. Like, I want to go to Iowa and wave to the kids, and we're going to Maryland. I get new experiences at this stage of my career. I'm pretty happy with that. The 3:30 in the morning re-arrival, coming back to L.A., not great.
Yeah, Washington did that last night, playing in Piscataway, New Jersey
on a
Friday night.
Yeah.
And then having to come back, I would assume, the night of. I think the changes, like for us, for all of our broadcast team, this is our first time in the L.A. Coliseum. This is... this is goosebump stuff.
Sure.
Looking out here and seeing this, and the marine layer now just burnt off, so it's sunny and gorgeous, and wow.
Go, if you got 30 minutes,
walk
to where the Coliseum torch is, where the Olympic torch is, and look at those plaques and all the history that's down there. If you can do that, a couple of Olympic Games, we're going to have a third one.
Yeah.
Another Olympic opening ceremony, and the track and field will be here. I've seen a lot of iterations of this Coliseum.
Sure. Yeah.
It was 103,000, now it's 77. Popes, concerts, presidents, a lot of stuff. This is probably the number one outdoor venue in the United States.
I would agree with that. And I think it ought to have Super Bowls again, but they don't do it because of the lack of suites or not enough suites. But I'll finish on this thought. This is a big game for USC. Maybe you can give me a sense of how big, because if they want to be in a playoff, today is close to a must.
They have to win out, probably.
Yeah.
And I think that they're taking every game seriously. I think their eyes, I know the fans' eyes, my eyes are on Penn State in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
If they get by Wisconsin and get by Maryland or Minnesota next week, Penn State comes in. They win that.
Yeah, you're on a roll.
Then you got a shot to be the 10 or 11 probably in the playoffs. If you lose one of these, you spit the bit here, or you lose to Penn State, which is certainly possible, then you're probably looking at the Alamo or the Holiday Bowl or something of that nature. They've got to come out today. They've come out slowly against LSU. They've come out slowly, really slowly, against Michigan. And you can't blame them for that at that place and all that. But they've got to come out firing today right from the very get-go to prove to themselves that they can do that. And if they can do that, they should win this game today. They should.
Yeah.
Big favorites. And they certainly should win at Minnesota next week.
Agreed on both, I think. But we'll find out. That's why they get to play it.
0-0 so far.
That's right. Pete, it's a pleasure to see you again. Thanks for spending time with us.
I remember the Holiday Bowl that we got to meet.
A little chilly down there.
A heck of a ball game, too.
It was.
Sitchie made, I think it was
three straight.
Yeah, it was I remember after the second one, I said, maybe somebody should block this guy.
Kid was fired up. He didn't play in the first half because of a targeting suspension a week before. Came out of the locker room and three straight sacks.
That was a heck of a ball game. Yeah. And before I let you go, because you're going to let me go, I can't imagine that there are a ton of people that were at the 63 Rose Bowl.
No.
That are, because I was eight.
Yeah.
And so you would have had to been... you'd be in your 80s if you were 18.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
it's still a game that's talked about.
I was there. I was there, and I got on the field after the game with my grandpa, and it was just an amazing day. What a great game. And in those days, there were no lights, so it basically was finished in the dark.
Fantastic. Pete, good to visit with you. Coming up next, our Minute with Mac, presented by Evans Transportation, as we hear from Wisconsin Athletics Director Chris McIntosh. This is Badger Football from Learfield.
Hi, it's Matt LePay, voice of the Badgers. On the field, the Badgers are always on the move. Off the field, that's where Evans Transportation comes in. As Wisconsin's 3PL, they move over 30,000 shipments a year right here in the Badger State. That's dedication to keep things moving here in Scotty. Evans is excited to support Badger student-athletes and is a proud partner of Wisconsin Athletics. Find them at evanstrans.com. That's evanstrans.com. Go Badgers!
Are you seeking a better career? Rail Transport offers truck drivers a variety of driving jobs earning top wages. No CDL? No problem. Get paid to get your CDL with Rail's on-the-job paid training program. We're also seeking top talent for driver and customer support positions. To see all the career opportunities at Rail and how you can take home more and be home more, visit rail.jobs. That's rail.jobs. Rail Transport is a proud sponsor of the Badgers.
Malusi to the 10, to the 5, touchdown, Wisconsin, Chez Malusi, 89 yards.
Hey, Badger fans, it's Chez Malusi, running back for the Wisconsin football team. Join us in taking the Badgers to the next level. With a Camp Randall Club membership, you can help us achieve greatness on and off the field. In return, you'll get exclusive experiences, inside access, and opportunities to connect with student athletes like never before. Camp Randall Club has its vision set on victory. Do you? Visit CampRandallClub.com today to join.
Usinger's has been making America's finest sausage for over 140 years. Now Usinger's fresh brats are flash frozen and vacuum packed so they stay butcher shop fresh for 6 months in your freezer. And because there's no air in the package, there's no need for chemical preservatives. Usinger's fresh brats are the freshest, most additive-free you will find. Enjoy some this summer with our other Great Link products. Our backpack sausage seals in flavor and leaves out chemicals. Remember, if it's got the elf on the label, you've got quality on your table.
Badger football is on the air.
And the Badgers defense puts a touchdown on the board.
On the Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
I don't know about other states, but in Wisconsin, we help our neighbors and love our communities. But California mega millionaire Eric Hovde doesn't seem to get that. Maybe that's why he questioned whether children should be able to stay on their parents' insurance until they're 26. And whether people in nursing homes should be able to vote. Hovde called for raising the retirement age for hardworking Wisconsinites and making obese people pay more for health care. And a Hovde company even spent decades trying to demolish the building housing Madison's oldest family-owned bar. Something they finally did this year, shuttering a treasured neighborhood institution for good. That is not how we do things in Wisconsin. And that is why we can't let California mega millionaire Eric Hovde represent us. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together Action. ABWT-action.org. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Mike Heller back with you with Wisconsin football at Southern Cal. The Badgers and USC kick off today at 2:30. The first meeting between these two head coaches, Luke Fickell and Lincoln Riley, since 2018. These are the two of the top five winningest coaches in college football. Riley is fourth at 64-17, and Luke Fickell is fifth at 63-17. Kirby Smart, Dabo Sweeney, and Brian Kelly are the top three. Time now for our Minute with Mac, presented by Evans Transportation. Customized logistics solutions to keep your business moving. Here's Matt LePay.
Our Minute with Mac, presented by Evans Transportation. Customized logistics, no matter your shipment size. Well, out to the L.A. Coliseum. For a lot of folks, it'll be the first time that they have visited that historic venue, but you've been there a couple of Rose Bowl practices at the Coliseum, right?
I have, and it's a special place. It's it's a historic venue in college football, and had the privilege, obviously, to participate in two Rose Bowls and practice there each year, and some really fond memories of that place as part of the experience. I remember Tommy Lasorda addressing us on that field, and at the time we were able to go through their locker room and see some of the history there. Obviously, USC is a program that is a storied one, and obviously a great addition to the Big Ten and a huge challenge for us. But it'll be a fun game today, and at a venue that I think our team will remember playing in for the rest of their lives.
You know, and part of the benefits of being, you know, with the Big Ten going out to the West Coast, anytime the Badgers play out there, if it's, you know, now or the Rose Bowl or even like in 2008 they played Fresno State, there are a lot of UW alums who live out there, so a great chance to mix and mingle with some very loyal Badgers who they get kind of a pseudo home game now with the team coming to their backyard.
They do, and they're excited about it. And you know, there's been a lot of excitement around some of the events that have taken place on this trip, and it's great to see, you know, a lot of our Badger family from the West Coast here, and great people. And like you said, Matt, it's been on very limited occasions we've been able to come out here and pay them a visit. And so this is one of the benefits of an expanded Big Ten.
All right, that is Athletics Director Chris McIntosh, and that is this week's Minutes with Mac.
All right, thank you, Matt. Before we continue, let's pause 10 seconds for station ID. 10 for an ID. This is Wisconsin Football from Learfield.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
And when